I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art. In this segment, we welcome one of San Diego's most dedicated practitioners and devotees of the jazz organ. Longtime local musician Douglas Cavandal has been playing professionally since the age of 15, including many years as a touring artist throughout the country. He's a founding member with trumpeter Joe Dyke of Jazz West, along with the Live Jazz Quartet, which recently concluded a 7-year residency at the King's Inn in Mission Valley. Every first and third Tuesday, you can enjoy the Douglas Cavandal Hammond Organ Trio at the Duckfoot Brewery in Miramar, along with a monthly Sunday concert and jam session at the Jazz Lounge in the Rolando College area. Douglas Cavandal, it's great to have you on Inside Art.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Well, when did this love affair, if I can say that, with the Hammond B3 or the organ in general begin, and what precipitated it?
Well, my mother started me on piano lessons when I was 5. She started all of us kids. There were 4 of us. It took with me. And actually, my sister became a piano teacher for a while, and my mom was a piano teacher, but I took lessons for about a year, I think, when I was 5. I quickly decided lessons weren't my thing at that time. I don't know why, but I continued to play. I had always had a piano in my room. There were a lot of kids, so I lived in the garage extension. That was my room.
Oh, you lucky kid, you.
And I would sit there and listen to things like the only thing I knew at the time when I was like 12 years old, which was Peter Nero, and kind of, you know, pop, classical kind of jazz. I wouldn't consider it jazz so much now these days, but that's what I was kind of listening to. And so I grew up kind of like with swing music. And then when I was about 14 or 15, I started playing in the church. And then I got my first my first professional gig was demonstrating organs at Sears and Roebuck up in Normal Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a while. And then I started playing professionally in high school with a group of 4 or 5 other guys. Joe Dyke was one of those guys who's still around. Joe plays probably 250 gigs a year or something like that. He's done for 30-something years, the Oktoberfest or something in La Mesa. Anyway, and also I have another longtime friend who I still play with, Jeff Dalrymple.
We know him well here at Jazz 88.3, yes.
He was there for like 30 years or something like that, something ridiculous. And Jeff still plays with me. He's in the house band with me up at Duckfoot. And then I play with a lot of different drummers and guitar players, but I was on the road for 10 or 12 years constantly. I would be on the road for 18 months, come home for 6 weeks, and hit the road again, and kind of did the lounge circuit thing. And then I got tired of the lounge thing and the whole life and everything. Met my wife, got married, had kids, started a computer business, which I still have to this day. That's what pays the bills for the Hammond organ.
A little bit of a background on the Hammond organ, if people are not quite familiar with it, because it's not something you just carry around with you in a case.
You do not. It's about 500 pounds. And it was invented in 1935 by Lawrence Hammond. And he was a clockmaker. And he invented this way of these little wheels turning around to keep... he invented the first asynchronous clock, which kept accurate time. And he sold a bunch of those to the Navy and stuff like that. And then he was kind of like a Renaissance guy. He said, well, what can I do with this clock thing? He decided he'd make a musical instrument. So that's what he tried to do, and that's what he ended up doing. And that... those little tone wheels, there's 96 of them inside of a Hammond organ. They're little about 1¼-inch wheels that spin. When you start up a Hammond organ, you have to start them spinning with a motor. A lot of people, keyboard players, first time they come to a Hammond, they have no idea how to turn it on.
You happen to be at your Hammond right now.
I am.
So maybe you can give us a talking demonstration a little bit as you go about this.
Sure. My organs are in really good shape, so they're very quiet. I don't know if we can hear this. Let me turn my organ off here. So I've got a little motor here. Let's see. So I start this motor up, and you hold this little button down for about 10 seconds, and that's called the start motor, and then I hit the run, That turns the power on, I let the other one off, and now we're running. And you can hear it when sometimes we use that when we're playing, like to bend notes, like.
Oh, boy.
You'll hear it goes up and down and up and down, you know, because the voltage. It works on, to get technical, 50 cycles. So it'll never go out of tune. You can't change the tuning in this. It's 50 cycles. That's what it is. So if you go out and play in a field on a generator, sometimes it'll change pitch because the cycles aren't right on the generator or something. So it's very sensitive to all that. But they're 500 pounds. They're like a piece of furniture, you know. It's like a buffet table. And then the speakers are special speakers. The organ itself doesn't have any sound that you can hear. You have to have these Leslie speakers that were invented by Don Leslie back in the 50s to accompany the organ. The organ was invented to replace as a substitute for the pipe organ in the church because organ churches couldn't afford big pipe organs all the time. So they invented this thing. And we have little things that are called drawbars. They're little sliding things that go in and out here. And those, by using those, we can get different sounds, and those simulate the different instruments, like a clarinet and a flute and all that kind of stuff in the church. And then back in about 1940, 1950, after the organ was invented, Fats Waller came along and Wild Bill Davis, who were piano players, and they found the organ. They started playing the organ. And you can hear their recordings all over the place. They kind of sound kind of corny these days because they were playing like ragtime and stuff like that. There's some very, very famous recording of Wild Bill Davis playing April in Paris with the Duke Ellington band. And it was actually his arrangement. There's a long story about that. I won't go into that. But anyway, there's a long history. So since then, along have come a whole bunch of people, Jimmy McGriff, Jimmy Smith, Don Patterson.
The late Joey DeFrancesco, of course.
Yeah, Joey, who I've met many times and hung with a few times. And I've met a lot of these guys because it's a small community. And every year, the Hammond artists at NAM, the National Association of Music Merchants in Anaheim every year, Hammond has a booth there, and so all the Hammond people hang out there. So you meet everybody. I've met, you know, Brian Charette there, Brian Auger there. I met, you know, just the who's who of everybody comes there and sits in and plays. And then you get to stand right next to Joey while he's playing. You can sit there and touch him while he's playing. It was just like, it's pretty magical. So, and then once you've met these guys, you know them to call them on the phone, and you take little lessons with them, or you trade tips. And we do this Zoom thing like you and I are doing right now. I could show you a picture. There's like 10 or 12 of us at one time in all these little windows, and we all play for each other. You can't musically synchronize things because of the delay time on the Zoom, but we can all play for each other, so I could... So we play for each other and kind of critique is not the right word, but suggest and comment on what everybody's doing and see how they are interpreting a tune. We'll pick a different tune every week. I do two of these group sessions every month with my mentor and teacher, Tony Monaco, who's in Columbus, Ohio. And Tony is he's got about 13 CDs out. His last CD went to number 5 on the jazz charts here last year, and he's got a new one coming out this month, which I'm currently helping him transcribe his stuff, because he doesn't really write down what he does. He just does it and records it, and then a couple of us pitch in and kind of notate it and annotate it and have it for everybody else out there on the web if they want to play along and see what Tony does.
Well, the Hammond B3 in particular is a stalwart instrument in certain forms of music, you know, jazz, the jazz organ trio for one, gospel music, another one, very, very popular, soul. And in terms of the jazz organ trio, you've been doing this for quite a while in and around San Diego. Is there any correlation to why this particular instrument is so popular in jazz?
Well, yeah, I think so. Number one, we don't play with bass players. My bass player is right here with my left hand. That is my bass player. And the bass player and the drummer always have to be in sync in music. And so that's the special thing that happens in the organ trio, is that my left hand and the drummer are playing, hopefully, together in a nice groove. Then either we have a third person, which would be either a guitar player or a sax player. So there's been a lot of famous guitar players. Wes Montgomery played with Jimmy Smith, the whole bunch. Tony's been on the road with many, many guitar players. That's the typical thing, is the guitar. So the guitar will be playing a solo while I'm comping down here. I'm doing like this kind of stuff. And you'll notice you can hear some click in there. Sometimes we treat it as a percussion instrument. So you know, the guitar player is a guitar, the drums are the drums, but a Hammond organ is different with everybody who plays it, because number one, every Hammond organ sounds different. Every single one sounds different because they're old, and because the keys get kind of mushy, and there's things that happen that are deficiencies, like crosstalk and this key click. And it's because of the mechanics. This is a mechanical instrument. It's tubes, resistors, and capacitors, and a bunch of steel. That's it, and wood.
Well, thereby you get a certain character to each of these instruments.
Every single one of them. And then the way each of us Hammond artists, we have a way of doing it because of using the controls. And playing a Hammond organ is kind of like flying a helicopter. So like a drummer, we use all four of our appendages. Our left foot is playing bass pedals. And I'm doing that along with my left hand. There's the bass pedals. There's just the left hand. And then when I add the bass, it really punches it out. Okay. Then we have all of these controls. So we have percussion, which adds, I'll demonstrate that. So here's how it sounds without percussion. If I add percussion, gives that little percussive thing on the top. It's not like a drum. It's like we have two types of percussion, and they emphasize the third and the fifth harmonic, depending. I've got four little switches over here to the right. So there's 16 combinations of the percussion. There are 9 drawbars that go out to 8 positions. So each drawbar has a different sound on it. And so if you exponentially take that out, it's 9 to the 8th power combination of sounds that we can get. And we have 2 manuals. So we have drawbars, 2 sets of drawbars for each manual that we can switch back and forth. So we can make all the sounds. We can do the percussion. Then we have this other stuff over here on the left that's called vibrato and chorus. And we have a little knob here. And we can do those separately for the upper and the lower ones. So I can play, let me play a, so this is what the organ sounds like. But if I add chorus or vibrato, okay, I can do that on each manual. And then we have something else very special that works with the Hammond, with the Leslies. And I have a little switch down here that's a 3-position switch. There were about 30 models of Leslie's made. And I should mention that the Hammond organ, I don't know how many kinds of models there were. There were about 30 of those too. But the only ones that we really are of any value these days to musicians are the 3 series, we call it, the B3, the C3, and the A100. I'm playing an A100 right here, and I travel and play with a C3, and they're all identical except for the cabinet. The guts are the same. All the controls are the same. So the only difference is the cabinet. The C was made for the church because it had a privacy panel on the front, so you couldn't see the ladies' legs while they were playing in the church. And we take all that off. You know, we take all that off. And I have a little light down here, and people can see me playing the pedals, and I wear colorful socks to pay, you know, pull attention to that. And then the B has posts, like a poster bed. And then this A100, it's got other stuff in it. It's got actually got speakers in it, and it's got some reverb in it and some other little controls. But otherwise, they're exactly the same. All the other models are throwaways. You'll see them for free all over the internet. You can get an M3, you can get a T, you can get, there's like all these models, and people will call me, you want this? No, I don't want that, no. This organ here, I purchased from a little old lady up in Seal Beach. Well, not from her, from her son. She had passed, and he was moving. And so that's one way you pick these things up, is from people who pass, and you pick them up somewhere, or from churches. Churches are throwing these things out now because they take so much upkeep and repair, and there's so few technicians around anymore.
And also, they're not being made anymore, of course.
They haven't been made since the 70s. Although Hammond Suzuki bought out Hammond. Hammond went out of business. Chicago Organs bought their parts for a couple of years. Now Hammond Suzuki bought them, and they're now manufacturing organs, but they're electronic. They're not tube. So they make Leslie's, and they make organs, and they're very expensive. You can pick up, a good B3. I just did one for a church that I built from scratch, and sold it to the church for about $10,000. But there, you can pick up a nice B3. It depends on the cabinet. You can pick them up for $4,000 to $8,000, something like that. But an A100, you can pick it up for $1,000, and a C, you can pick up for a couple thousand dollars. They're all the same organ. And then Leslie's range from $1,500 to $2,000 or $3,000, depending what they're. When I buy them inexpensively. I paid one that's sitting back here a couple hundred bucks, and I paid $500 for my other one, and I've got three Leslie's. I use two of them up at Duckfoot. So if you, that's what's unusual. I should mention that there's nobody else in town hauling all this equipment around. There's nobody crazy like I am, and I have a bad back, and I'm 75 years old. But I have a van with a ramp and all the stuff, you know, I can load it in, load it out myself, and I'm sweating pretty good when I do it. I got to get to the gig early. And everybody, the guitar player and the drummer are gone in the end of the night, and I'm loading it in at, you know, 10 and 11 o'clock at night into the van myself. But I, up at Duckfoot, they have lots of room up there. So I have two Leslie's going up there that are about 20 foot apart, and I've got them all lit up, so when they go fast, they turn red, and when they go slow, they go blue. That's just my kind of little show business thing. But people come to see me because of the Hammond, not so much me. I'm just kind of like, I'm just there making it work, you know. And there's, I have jam sessions, so keyboard players come in, and they get to play a real Hammond organ with a couple Leslie speakers. People get to enjoy the sound of a Hammond. And I was going to mention one thing, because I learned something just this morning. I was reading up on the Hammond organ to kind of get my history of the what year everything was made and stuff. And somebody mentioned in this article that he noticed that when he went out in the audience, he was the performer, it was his rig, he went out in the audience, the organ always sounded so great. And when he went up and played it, it never sounded that great. And I've experienced that same exact thing. When Larry Goldings came to town in February, which is where I kind of kicked off all of this stuff with all these gigs around town and stuff, especially the Jazz Lounge. Larry came to town, he used my rig. And he loved it and it sounded great, but he was doing a sound check and I was sitting out there next to him on this and I go, man, that sounds great. And you get up and play it, and I asked Larry, I said, you know, it sounds so great when you play it. You know, and I knew it wasn't, you know, he's a great player. I wasn't just that, but I found out what the reason is. The reason is that the Leslie speakers, when you're close to them, and I always have the Leslie right here on my side, they use different frequencies. They use, well, Leslie puts out AM and FM frequencies because of how they're designed and the little horns that flip around. I should mention that Leslie is a rotating speaker, you know, and that's what this little switch is. It switches the speeds. I'll show you that in a second. And when you're close to it, all you hear is the AM, or mostly. But when you get in the audience, you hear the FM. You got to be about 20 feet away to hear the FM. And apparently, FM is more pleasing to the human ear. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I never knew that after how many years it's taken me, 60 years to hear that little tidbit. So there's always something to learn about the Hammond. And all of these controls, we call it cockpit control, because we'll be going along, we'll be doing this, and then we'll do a solo. Then we'll be ready to do something like this. And then I'd use my vibrato, and I use the speeds, and I use the percussion. And so you have to, if you want to make it sound good, when you're switching things, you have to be ready to get it to go. So I'll be playing along here, and so I'll use my foot to do something and keep this going here, and then I'll come over here and I'll hit this so it's ready to go. So we call that cockpit control. You have to not only know where they're at, but you got to get them ahead of time, and you've got to be thinking ahead of time about what you're doing. And of course, we're improvising all the time. That's 99% of what we do. We're improvising. I'm playing the guys that play with me around town. Like this month, Bob Boss is playing with me. Great guitar player. I usually have Louis Valenzuela or Zoe Shaw or Rudy Marquez or some of these guys around town play. And there's no rehearsal. It's not a jam session. It's a concert first. They play a concert for an hour, and then we open it up for jam. But, you know, we're just making up as we go along, which is what jazz is all about. But it's the same thing with the organ. I don't have anything planned about which sound I'm going to or whatever. It's just the spur of the moment, how I feel. I'll do things like I'll do turnarounds. We'll do that. I'll do that for like 5 or 10 minutes. And the guitar player doesn't know how I'm doing it. They're just listening to what I'm doing, and hopefully I'm listening to what they're doing, and everybody's following each other. So the organ, I love it because I love improvising music, but I also love improvising the Hammond sounds. And so when I have guys come and sit in that are keyboard players, and a lot of them are really great keyboard players, but they're not organ players. They're not Hammond organ players. And they'll come up and they'll play. They'll never change a sound. They'll just play a song, the whole song. It's really nice. It's really boring to me, you know. I mean, I don't mean that as disrespect. You know, I appreciate what they're doing, but that's why I'm part of why I think I'm doing this is to help them get acquainted with what could be done. You know, they don't have a Hammond organ at home. They don't have one they can play. You know, so this is an opportunity for them to do that. So I'm having several guys come out, some older guys. I've got some youngsters. I've got some guys in their 20s that are coming out that are learning the instrument. They'll stay after the gig, and I'll sit there and I'll show them stuff. And they're hungry to learn it, you know. So that's good because we're a dying breed. There's not too many of us out here that are willing to spend the time or have the instrument or whatever. And my life has changed since I, 5 years ago, since I met Tony at a jazz summit in Michigan. And he became my teacher. And that's where I really devoted myself. I always played by the seat of my pants. Like I told you, I only took lessons for like a year or something like that till I got to college, majored in music at college. But I was a terrible student. I never practiced. I majored in piano and trombone, and I never practiced. And now, just since I turned 70, now I practice like every day, and I get what Tony calls getting intimate with the tune. Never got intimate with the tune. You know, for when I played in my quartet, my piano quartet, I'd pull a bunch of tunes for the night and just pop them on the guys, and we'd all just play them. Maybe that's the first time we played them, or we play them once on the blue moon. Now I practice things for hours and hours and hours, so I don't have to think about it, and I can think about all this other stuff that's going on. You know, so that's my thing, is immersing myself in the Hammond organ. I've kind of devoted the rest of my life, however long that is, to do that. And I'm aware that I don't have, we don't, none of us know how long we have, but I'm 75 years old, and I don't know how long I'm going to be able to haul this thing around, but I'm doing it.
Well, Doug, you have a jazz trio, a jazz organ trio that you play with regularly, and it also includes a jam session occurring at two different locations. Tell us about what the kind of gigs you're doing on a regular basis here.
Yeah, so I play your normal run-of-the-mill, if you will, jam sessions at a bar, and that's the one that I do twice a month on the first and the third Tuesday of the month is at Duckfoot in the Miramar area. And I have a concert for an hour first with my jazz trio that features usually a different drummer and a different guitar almost every month, guitar player, picking from the guys around town that I know that are accomplished, and most of them have kind of been playing with me with the trio for a while, so they're familiar with the idiom, and we have a lot of fun doing that. And so that's at that venue, I have my full organ and my two Leslie speakers. You get the full experience of what's going on there. Then at the Jazz Lounge up in the Rolando area and College area, I play at the Jazz Lounge on the fourth Sunday of every month. It's in the afternoon. It's an afternoon gig. The Miramar one is a 6:30 at night. This is 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I play a concert for an hour, again, with a variety of artists, and it's a real listening venue. But we open it up to jammers at the end after the concert section, but it's very intimate. If you haven't been there, you've got to visit the Jazz Lounge. It's like a little piece of a New York jazz club right here in San Diego.
And where can people get more information about your music?
Oh, great. Yeah, you can go to my website. It's DK Jazz Organ. DK is my initials, Doug Cavondo. So DKJazzOrgan.com. All my stuff's on there.
Okay, we'll be sure to visit. Doug Cavondo, thanks for being a great practitioner and promoter of the Hammond B3 Jazz Organ, and thanks for joining us again on Inside Art.
Yeah, thanks again, Dave.
The Douglas Cavondal Hammond Organ Trio performs every first and third Tuesday in a concert and jam session starting at 6:30 p.m. at Miramar's Duckfoot Brewery, located at 8920 Kenmar Drive. Also a monthly afternoon concert and jam every fourth Sunday at the Jazz Lounge on El Cajon Boulevard in the Rolando College area. You can see a full performance schedule and learn more at dkjazzorgan.com. Inside Art is made possible with support from the members of Jazz 88.3. Replays and extended versions of every Inside Art broadcast are available online at jazz88.org/InsideArt. Again, my thanks to Douglas Kvandal, Lisa Sanaye Dring, and Ralph Pena. For Jazz 88.3, I'm Dave Drexler. Join me again on air and online for another edition of Inside Art.